It's 8:18 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. We've been reporting the Park City Board of Education voting unanimously last night to adopt a bond resolution, putting a special bond on the November ballot for those living within the Park City School District boundaries. In the studio with me now, I have District Business Administrator Todd Halber, along with School Board Member Phil Kaplan. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So, Phil, it's a slam dunk. I mean, we knew it was had to happen, right?
The vote last night was pretty much the aftermath of the decision to put the projects on the bond, on the ballot.
Okay. So this is up to the voters. School board really doesn't have any more say in it at this point. The bond language bond includes language for acquiring land. What land do we need to acquire and why?
So that's more of a boilerplate for a resolution should that present itself as a necessity in the process of looking at the high school or at the Ecker Hill, and that maybe that site specific isn't going to work. We have some latitude. So it's again, just keeping options open.
Okay. But the plan is to build that elementary school, 5th and 6th grade, at Ackerham.
Yes.
Now, in Wasatch County, they also are going out for a bond. They're building an elementary school for 800 students for $18.5 million. Why does it here in Park City cost $24.8 million for an elementary school for two grades?
Good question. I haven't seen their plan, so I'm not sure what the scope of their project is. What we're looking at with our $24 million is adding on to the end of the Ecker School that's out past the junction there. And so I haven't had a chance to look at their project. I'd love to be able to sit down and look at that and give you that cross-comparison. I just don't know it now.
Yeah, so we're going to do an addition as opposed to a separate building?
That's what we're looking at right now. We'll get into the design teams that are being formed as we speak, and we'll dig into those kinds of details. The cost analysis that was put together was looking at co-sharing much of the common space, such as your kitchens or your auditorium, music rooms, things like that, so that we wouldn't have such a high price tag.
Yeah. And to be clear, we're pulling in the fifth grade and the eighth grade, so it's two grades, approximately 800 students into that building.
Right. So what's the cost of holding a special election? Do we know that at this point?
I don't know all the costs yet. I've been working with the county clerk on that. The price tag is probably be under $5,000, but we'll see.
Okay. Not that big of a deal then.
No.
Because that certainly had been something that had been brought up by folks saying, asking you to wait a year so that we really can get a plan that makes sense. But, Phil, you're of the opinion that we can't wait another year?
I don't think it makes sense. I think the board voted unanimously to put it on the ballot this year because we have a window that makes sense for getting our kids served sooner rather than later.
All right. So assuming that this bond does get approved, and your research shows you that it should, given if people were honest with their answers, that they do vote and that they would vote for a $50 million bond, what happens from there?
I like that positive outlook. From what goes from there is we will be putting together design teams for each of those projects, and they will get into the nitty-gritty of what type of spaces will be in those buildings, what will they be next to, how will flow within the buildings work, make sure we have all the program needs of the schools brought together. So that'll be the next big task, and that's a pretty significant part of the process. And so the teams will pull ideas together. We'll have architectural experts on there, construction experts on there, and we'll have the public involved with looking at those programmatic ideas for the schools.
Yeah. So number one on the list of things to do is to expand the high school and that gymnasium. Does that have to wait until school's out in June to do that?
It not necessarily. The directions that we're looking at in the expansion could be extensions off of the place where education is happening right now. When the high school was remodeled, we actually were able to do that while school was in session. Tunnels were set so that the students were able to pass from one end of the building to the other without being in the construction zone, even though that they were walking through it within that tunnel. So we will look at ways to not disrupt education as much as possible.
And we probably could start with the 5th, 6th grade school as well then.
Sure. Yeah, either of those two projects could happen at the same time.
All right. And then the improvements there at McPolin, $1.5 million. Again, this is just parking lot and playground equipment? That's hard to believe it costs so much.
Well, it's also looking at Comstock as well. So we're trying to redesign how the traffic flow goes into the school. That's where much of the challenge has been, is trying to keep those students safe as they're leaving their parents' cars or if they're exiting the buses. And those traffic patterns were crisscrossing each other. So it's not just a parking lot, but it's parking lot, lane, road design, so that we can keep that front entrance to the school safe for the children.
So all of that then will be done by the start of school of August of 2017 then, huh?
That's the goal.
And then in terms of the field house, where do things go with that? I mean, will we have that by 2017 too, or?
Yeah, one of the design teams that Todd mentioned will be concerning athletic facilities, and it's going to work very closely with the high school design team because one affects the other. You know, the idea is not to have redundant facilities as we build new facilities for the sports team. So, yes, certainly the field house is part of that conversation.
Okay. So in terms of what it's going to cost us, Todd, you're the money man. How come we don't do it like on just like every $250,000? Maybe that's just the way my mind thinks.
We're asked to report it on the basis of the average primary home market value within our boundaries. So I think the math would be easier to say on every 100, every 2, or every million. You know, what, pick a round number so the math's easy. But we're obligated to report it on that average.
Okay, so what we're talking about is a $639,000. That's the average home value within the Park City School District.
And that's your market value. So that's not your taxable value. That's what the assessor thought your house was worth.
And that's a good point to make. And so we're talking about $123 a year for a home with a market value of $639.
Correct.
Different, though, a different story, though, for second homeowners and businesses. What does that mean?
It is. So on that one, in the state of Utah, there's a 45% exemption if you declare your home to be your primary residence. So if you haven't made that declaration, you're not eligible for that exemption. So on those commercial properties and second homes, you know, it's 45% more.
Okay. So they could be taking a bigger hit. And I mean, I don't know what commercial property is valued at, but I guess based on the same basis as a residential is.
Yeah. Now I just went blank. It's 200 and... Do you have that, Phil? I just went blank on that number.
Yeah.
But it's just over $200. And so, yes, without that exemption, the impact is greater on those properties.
All right. Much of the meeting last night spent about talking about how not to talk about the bond for the election. You can come do these informational interviews, but, I mean, where's the fine line here?
So the fine line really comes down to campaigning. And, yes, we had a training for the board on how to do this since none of us had been through actually a whole bond election cycle. It's been 1999 the last time this was done in Park City. So it's basically we can give as much information as anybody wants from us. So we would definitely encourage our folks to reach out to their particular board member in their district for a conversation, or we're happy to go out and speak to anybody about it. But we cannot talk about which way to vote on it. We clearly the board has now put it on the ballot for the voters to consider, and we will give adequate information for people to make an informed choice.
All right. The board will also be hiring a construction manager, a communications specialist, architects, and engineering firms. Board member Nancy Garrison concerned that hiring the construction and architect now would be a bit presumptuous before the bond's even approved. But, Todd, you're saying we got to do it?
Well, you mentioned the goal of being ready by August 2017. We have construction timelines. And so we need to get some of that pre-design work taken care of. So the programming, schematic design, those are elements that we can get into. They're not the most expensive part of architectural and construction design. Those are less expensive. So we feel it's okay to get into that cost level. Once you get into construction design and the engineering designs, those are the very expensive because you're getting into all the technical drawings that the contractor needs to build the structure. And that's where the price tag gets very high. So early on, let's get the process going. And it's not expensive for that part of the process.
And I'd also like to separate the concept of the projects and how you pay for them. So the projects are necessary. The school district needs to do these projects. And the bond is just the way that this is done, the way that they're paid for at over 20 years at a historically low interest rate.
So I can't figure out what VCBO's role in all of this is. I mean, are they just going to be one architecture firm that bids on these jobs? I mean, do you have to open it up to everybody?
Sure. Yeah, that's where we are. They were hired to be the master planner, and that work was completed when the master planning committee made the recommendation to the board a couple of weeks ago. So their work really is done at this stage, and we have a clean slate, and we have several projects to start bidding on.
Okay, and when do you expect to have those out to bid?
So right now I have drafts for the construction manager. I expect to get that out by the end of next week. We would like to have them on board and in place before we put the RFPs out for architects and contractors so we can have their expert advice in that process.
All right. And then let's briefly just talk about interest rates, because right now your numbers are based on what, 4%?
Yeah, an assumption of 4%.
And that's held steady for the last several years?
I don't know that it's that concept. What we're trying to project is when we might put the bonds out to market. Rates are around 3% today. We're expecting, at least the markets are expecting interest rates to go up with the next Fed meeting in September, so they'll probably go up a little bit. And then into the future, they could go up even more. So we've chosen a number to get in the ballpark of how much we may need for principal and interest payments, because we need to have bond authority today, even though we may not issue the bonds for a year or two.
Okay. Anything else you two wanted to that people should know following last night's meeting?
Just one more time, want to thank everybody who's participated in the process. We've had a huge number of general citizens come out on every side of the issues, as well as many of our district staff, teachers, team, principals, et cetera, volunteers, and we really appreciate it.
All right. Phil and Todd, thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you.
It's 20 minutes now before 9 o'clock. Good morning. Well, the Park City Council meeting tomorrow in a study session beginning at 12:30. Going to be a long meeting. In the studio with me, I have City Manager Diane Foster and Phyllis Robinson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. And it is going to be a long meeting, but I actually think it's a super interesting one. If you're interested in anything from housing to transportation to historic preservation, it's one to come to.
Well, the study session is with regard to the Brewpub Plaza scope. We're calling it for now Park Main, or is that a final title?
That is not a final title. That's a working title, and that came up from the architects, and there's an agency who's working on helping us figure out the who is the target customer for that area.
Yeah, so we're talking, what the city is asking for is kind of an anchor and event space at the top of Main Street. Does this mean we've got really a park green space? Are we talking about development there?
We haven't decided, and City Council hasn't decided, so that's part of the process. This is actually a two-hour interview process with GSBS and Struck Media. And what they'll be doing is trying to figure out how do we – I think the thing that we have heard from council is we want vibrancy at the top of Main Street. We want a reason to pull people up there besides the wonderful businesses that are up there. So what can we as the city provide for that? So there's been discussion about a need for event space. There's been the discussion of, hey, should we have Olympic or Sundance-type things up there? And so there are a lot of possible needs, and this is an opportunity to get with the City Council and find out, as representatives of the public, what they're interested in. It's also a great opportunity, I think, for the public to come in here because, as always, our City Council will be taking probably not public input at this one because it's a study session, but in the future there will be lots of opportunities for the public to weigh in.
Okay. Starting at 2:30, work session with about six or seven different agenda items on that. Phyllis, you'll be giving an update with regard to housing. So what's this about?
So when council decided to make housing one of its critical priorities, one of the commitments we made as staff was to come back to council on a monthly basis with just an update. So this is our update in terms of where we are on the goals that we've set for ourselves. Our large goal as a community is to have 10% of our housing stock in some form of a deed restriction, affordability controls. And so we're working for the next 5 years to bring that up from 5.5% to 7%. So some of those things that we're doing, the 1450, 1460 Park Avenue project is moving forward. We have a architect who's working on designs at this point, and we'll be coming back to council in October on that. We've just hired a firm, EPS, who's going to be working with us in really overhauling our housing program. So looking at our housing resolution, our land management code, the way that we are doing our in-lieus and our calculations, really starting from scratch and saying, here's how the world's been changing. Here's how different communities are beginning to look at housing to ensure that it's really capturing the needs in the community. So that's moving forward as well. And then we have a piece on Lower Park Avenue that we will be moving into from that housing update into another work session item with the council.
All right. At 3:20, then, be talking a little bit about the Lower Park Avenue Design Studio. What happens with this?
And this is really the next step. So in the spring of this year, we began with some outreach into the community, and we did a series of interviews with folks who were using city facilities in that area, as well as other residents, and then moved into a workshop in May to gather ideas for vibrancy in that area, how we want to redevelop on city-owned property, and including where the fire station is, where the senior center is, the perimeter of the field at the library, as well as other city properties within their Miners Hospital. What's really the highest and best use for that? So in July is the next step of that. We held the design studio, in which we had 10 design professionals from throughout the Intermountain West who came in and provided a series of ideas and concepts for consideration. And we're ready to move on to that next step. And so we've received a lot of new ideas and how we can move forward with that. So on Thursday, we'll be asking council for how we wish to move forward. Staff is recommending we move forward looking at specifically housing on the Park Avenue and the Woodside Avenue pieces. And then that really triggers the need to think about senior services and senior programs and where they should be relocated within the Lower Park Avenue area should council decide to move forward with housing on that piece.
All right. And as you're aware, Diane, the school board going ahead to put that $56 million bond on November 3rd's ballot. You also will be talking about that school district bond and getting an update. Do we know anything more in terms of some partnership with the city on the traffic?
We do know. So 2 weeks ago, the city council gave their okay for staff to move forward in discussing a partnership and even financial participation from the city on traffic mitigation items such as a frontage road and potentially other safety improvements. So we did get that okay from council, and so the city very much wants to partner with the school district on that. And as I was driving in this morning, I realized today is the last day of the easy flow on Route 248, and it will change tomorrow morning, and I will be aware of that. So what this work session is in particular is I don't think we expected to see the $12 million for athletic facilities. We were a little bit surprised by that, so we wanted to come right back to council and ask, do you want us to partner on those facilities? And when I say surprised, the reality is that Ken Fisher, who is our rec manager out at the MARC, as well as Tate Shaw and Ann Ober have been meeting, and as well as the planning department, have been meeting with the school district and talking about needs for facilities, such as should tennis courts be indoor or outdoor? What other types of shared uses can we have? Are there things that the school district wants to develop that may be available to the community in the off season or on evenings or weekends if they're not being used? And so we wanted to come right back and ask City Council, what do you want the posture to be on that? And the staff recommendation is to be willing to look at partnerships.
Okay. Finally, I just wanted to ask you about some open space. City's going to go ahead and purchase, what, 14 acres?
Yeah, this is exciting. COSAC is recommending that right above, it's kind of above Prospector area, there's 14 acres. It has four development rights on it. And COSAC has recommended the city go ahead and purchase that. And I believe we're approaching that with the intent of having the majority of it be open space, but holding out the opportunity in the future to have a few homes on that or a few units on that of affordable housing, as Phyllis talked about, to meet that, to work towards that 10% goal.
So you couldn't buy it with open space money, then you'd have to pull it out of general cost?
It would end up being a purchase with mixed funds, and we've done that before, such as when we bought Round Valley, we bought part of it with general fund money, actually enterprise fund money for water. There are like 20 acres available for the water department in Round Valley, for example.
And that's purchase price of what, $500,000?
$500,000. And we're quite excited about that. You know, it open space is not available as much as it used to be. So even a 14-acre parcel, particularly one that's in town, is quite exciting.
So are you talking about putting more than four units? Or
I don't believe there's a plan for right now. Council gave city staff direction that we should look at any city parcel that is not currently open space to look at it for affordable housing. And so as part of that, we're recommending, hey, keep part of this open for now, much like the Clark Ranch. We're in the process of working with Utah Open Lands on getting the conservation easement, and there may be some limited municipal uses on that as well.
Okay. Diane, Phyllis, thanks.
Thank you.
Morning News and the Local News Hour with Leslie Thatcher is provided by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Assemble Park City, Deer Valley Resort, and Promontory and the Promontory Foundation.
The American Cancer Society's Relay for Life of Summit County will be held later this month. They're looking for participants and volunteers to help raise money for cancer research. In the studio with me now, I have community manager of the American Cancer Society, Brianna Koopman. Good morning.
Good morning.
When and where is this happening?
It's going to be Friday, August 28th at 6 p.m. over at the New Park Amphitheater.
Okay, and so how do people get involved?
They can get involved by visiting our Relay for Life website, which is relayforlife.org, or they can also come on out that evening to show support for the American Cancer Society and our cancer survivors that we will be recognizing at the event.
Okay, so is this an all-night deal where they walk all night, or is it just going to be an evening event?
This is just an evening event. We are trying to re-engage the community, bring the education back, and we're going to be recognizing the survivors, and it will end roughly about midnight.
Okay. So what else is going to happen? I mean, you're going to have music and...
We have some live bands coming. We'll have bounce houses, vendors, and a big silent auction going.
Okay. Any idea how much money these events raise?
They raise around, on average, in the state of Utah, about $30,000 to $40,000.
Wow, that's great.
And we have 35 of them across the whole state, so... Utah is making a huge impact, and it's especially to support our research we have down in the valley at Huntsman and the U.
Okay. People want more information or to register, again, the website is what?
The website is relayforlife.org.
Okay. Hey, Brianna, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you so much.